Brethren, the next discourse will be by Brother Edmund Jesuit, Chicago Ecclesia. His subject, prophetic retrospects and prospects. Prophetic retrospects and prospects. Brother Edmund.
We're certainly very happy to be with you on this occasion and to share in the spiritual benefits that the Lord has for us. I bring to those assembled here the Christian love and greetings of the brethren that meet at Chicago. The greatest of all prophets made a remarkable forecast, and this was recorded by the gospel writer Luke, chapter 21, verses 25 to 26. On earth nations shall stand helpless, not knowing which way to turn from the roar and the surge of the sea. Men will faint with terror at the thought of all that is coming upon the world. And surely there has never been a time when conditions resemble this forecast more accurately than today. As you and I review the chronological record of God, we recognize the year 1974. It's a significant year because it marked really the completion of the first 100 years into the age of the millennium. And the year 1975 began the second century in the Messianic age. And surely the next 100 years will be even more dramatic and more eventful than the last 100 years, as we witness the transfer of earth's rulership from Satan to Christ. As we stand on the threshold of a new century, we recognize indeed that we have an exalted viewpoint, a great vantage point that we can stand from and watch. In retrospect, certainly you and I have found the accurate fulfillment of the many prophecies. We have had a verification of His sure word of prophecy. Now those who have a knowledge of the plan can recognize this. But what about those that do not have a knowledge of the divine plan and its systematic and precise times and seasons? They can also recognize the signs of the times that we are living in. But lacking discernment, they cannot account for the things that are transpiring. They don't know why. And yet the prophetic signposts are clearly marked, but they're marked in a language that all could not understand. And only those who have learned the divine languages of chronology and the divine language of prophecy are able to read these prophetic signposts correctly. As we reflect back these 100 years, we realize that much progress has been made along various lines. And included in this progress, of course, are the marvelous discoveries and the inventions. And these in particular are really millennial foregleans, aren't they? In the last century, have witnessed the beginning of the restoration of man's rights and his privileges. And in this wonderful period, the Lord also brought seasonal truth for His people. And never, never in man's history has there been so much knowledge as there has been in these last 100 years. And this knowledge, along all lines, began to refute and to destroy error. And in this last century, as Brother Poe mentioned, Satan's empire began to disintegrate. And yet, in all of this activity, God's all-important work of gathering His elect has not been interfered with. One of the greatest events that had transpired in the last quarter century, one that thrilled every consecrated heart throughout the earth, was Israel's dramatic rise as a nation. This, indeed, was an evidence that the present Lord was ready to perform a strange act, an act on behalf of Israel. And even in the last year, the Lord has been rearranging the props on the world stage, getting ready to feature tiny Israel in a spectacular act. And the prophetic word provides the setting for Israel before she is delivered by her God. She must be standing all alone, without a friend in this world. She must be at the mercy of her enemies. And it is then, in that position, that deliverance will come by the same hand that delivered them on so many occasions many centuries ago. As we review the nations of the world, we note their role in this great drama of the ages. We also recognize that Israel plays the important part. However, there have been other nations that have also been assigned special parts to play on the world stage. We remember Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. But included in all of this array of nations, those that God had used, we must include these United States. Because it also had been given a part to play in this divine program. This nation will celebrate its 200th birthday. And we believe that its mission is about complete. God has used these United States for His purpose and to further His cause. Now, in order to appreciate the last 100 years, we'd like to go back another 100 years at the birth of these United States. And as we do, let us observe the groundwork that was necessary before the heavens would release the one who started that work way back at Calvary. And evidently the Lord earmarked 100 years of preparation before His Son was ready to come into this world in 1874. Our nation had a very unique beginning. 200 years ago, the Lord began to shape this land in such a way that it would be ready for its final work, for His final work. This new world was to be the home for the oppressed of many lands throughout the earth. God's time clock said that the time for freedom from oppression was due, and the Lord began to rearrange things. He selected the time, He selected the place and the conditions. And this review, we'd like to take you to the prophecy of Isaiah, chapter 18, the first three verses. Listen to what the prophet says. Chapter 18, the first verse. Ho! Not woe, as the King James says. This is not the right translation. But ho to the land shadowed with wings. Now this statement directs us to the emblem that is used by the United States, the emblem of liberty. It uses this bird called the eagle. And you'll find this emblem on all of the United States coins, seals, notes, bonds, and other means of transaction. And this seems to point to a providence that would care for this land. Now the Lord frequently will use the eagle and its wings in His Word to represent His divine care, His protection. However, this symbolizes protection for His own people, not nations. The promise is recorded by David in the 91st Psalm where he says, He shall cover thee with His feathers, and under His wings thou shalt trust. Now this promise is made to the church, no question. Certainly not to any earthly government. Nevertheless, in a sense, the affairs of earthly governments are supervised in the interests of God's purpose. And as you go back to the pages of history, it faithfully records some of the notable instances where God intervened when the fulfillment of His plan would be altered. And God will, and He does interfere when nations go beyond the prescribed limits of God. And this is so dramatically demonstrated, I think, by the nations of Israel and Egypt. Now this favored land of ours was unknown to civilization. It was kept hidden until God's due time. Until it was needed as a home, an outlet for the rapidly crowding conditions in Europe. But more than this, this new land opened its doors at the birth of the great Reformation period. Just when that wonderful book, the Bible, was released to the masses. Notice God's timing. Our God is an accurate timekeeper. And timing and proper sequence are important to the success of any plan. Likewise, it is imperative in the divine plan. And so the discovery of America came exactly on time. Notice also the kinds of people that populated this land. Were they the rich? No. Were they the highly educated, those that had various titles? No. Were they the very lowest on the social ladder? Again, we answer, no. Were they of the ignorant kind? No. Were they the very poor? No. Well, what kind of people were they? These were the thinkers. These were the ones that did the protesting. These are the ones who endured the suffering and the persecution in their former lands. And many fled, as you well know, from history, from religious persecution, just to worship God as they pleased. And it was these who found these United States shadowed, cared for by divine favor, wings of divine favor. This land of ours could not be better symbolized, I believe, than by that huge statue that stands at the shores of New York Harbor. The renowned Statue of Liberty. Those of you that paid a visit to that statue noticed, I'm sure, the words inscribed at its base. significant words, liberty enlightening the world. But even more remarkable is the date that this statue was designed. It was designed exactly 100 years ago in 1874. The very year that the Lord would unlock the door of liberty. A coincidence? Perhaps. The prophet Isaiah continues his prophecy, suggesting to us the geographical location of this unusual land. Isaiah 18:1. There he says, beyond the rivers of Ethiopia. What was he referring to? Well, in ancient times, little was known of how big this earth really was. And Ethiopia was really called the ends of the earth. For example, the Queen of Sheba came from Ethiopia. The scripture says, from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. Note the words, from the ends of the earth. And so if you would interpret the text from this standpoint, it would mean beyond the waters of the ends of the earth. And this seems to describe America as yet unknown and not intended to be discovered until God's appointed time. Then notice the next declaration by the prophet, verse 2. That sendeth ambassadors by the sea, even upon the waters in vessels of bulrushes. Strange language, isn't it? Vessels of bulrushes. Yet, how very appropriate when understood. This word bulrushes comes from the word papyrus. And in the revised version of the Bible, you'll find the word papyrus used. And the word really means paper. And so we look at the text again. Would we say vessels of paper? Certainly not literal. The language of prophecy is always couched in some form in symbols. So what could this mean? A vessel is a vehicle of transport, isn't it? Could this paper vessel carry the printed word? Could it be the printed page? Could these printed vessels carry the kingdom message? And the answer is, of course. These paper vessels were really the Bibles, the tracts, the books. These were the ambassadors of the kingdom. And commencing with the year 1879 to 1916, vessels of bulrushes, truth literature simply poured out of this favored land of ours. And then in the Lord's arrangement, this land would be the home of the seventh messenger. All the previous six messengers had their home in Europe. But the Laodicean messenger was going to perform a huge work. There was a great worldwide harvest that he had performed. And so his headquarters would be right here in the United States. And as we review this decision by the Lord, of all the nations in the world, only this nation would be suitable to accomplish the great work of the harvest. Because within this nation, the right people responded. They were protected by conditions. They had the freedom. And these paper vessels, almost 20 million books, 800 million tracts, all in the important languages of the world, made a dramatic announcement to the world. And this is found in verse 3. All ye inhabitants of the world, See ye when he lifted up an ensign on the mountain, and he bloweth the trumpet. 100 years ago, the great antitypical Jubilee trumpet sounded, announcing indeed the great day of liberty. The 1,000-year millennial day. And all of this originates in this land, shadowed by wings of divine providence. You and I live in this land that the Lord has used so effectively in the harvest period. And even at this late date, the Lord again used this land and his people to make special vessels of bulrushes. Really, these were vessels that were designed by that messenger. These were really duplicates. We had the pattern. All we had to do is just duplicate the pattern. And you and I have had the privilege of reprinting the towers and the writings of that servant. And these special vessels also were distributed worldwide from these United States. Almost 6 decades have gone by since the passing of that harvest messenger. And as you and I assess the present attitude of Bible students toward that servant and his message, what do we find? We recognize that the tests of this gospel harvest would be very similar to that of the Jewish harvest. However, in this gospel harvest, there's another kind of a test that the Lord introduced, and that is the acceptance of the Lord's appointed servant and his message. And the test is called the letter R test. And this test has 3 parts to it. The 3 R's stand for recognition, reliance, and responsibility. Take the first R, recognition. Have we recognized the harvest truths and the messenger? Now, we're not using this word recognition from the standpoint of merely recognizing something, but we're using it with this meaning: to acknowledge with approval and appreciation. Now, some have recognized the harvest truths. Some have recognized the messenger. But they're not able to acknowledge and to approve with appreciation. Let's take the second R, reliance. After we recognize the harvest message, do we rely on it? Certainly the test of time has proven the reliability of that servant. And indeed his ministry has been a mainstay in these last few years, hasn't it? And then the last responsibility, the last R, our knowledge of truth. In particular, the harvest truths bring responsibility, as Brother Roach had outlined for us. And this responsibility includes not only the promulgation of truth, but also to stand in its defense. Defend it not only when it is attacked by outsiders, but also to defend it when it is changed, altered, or modified by insiders. These 3 R's, recognition, reliance, responsibility, cannot be separated. They must work together. In assessing the position of our nation, we recognize that it still stands as the most prosperous in the world. But what is happening to this good land of ours? This land that was called the land of plenty. This land that was a land of liberty. This land that afforded justice for all. What is the mood of its citizens? Much the same as in other parts of the world. True, there is more in this land than any other. It is true that the citizens here in this land enjoy a large measure of freedom. But along with all of this, there is poverty. Along with this freedom, there is frustration, there is discrimination, there is discouragement. And I'm sure we can detect that there is a social and moral sickness that is indeed poisoning this land. The prophetic retrospects and prospects suggest the decline and fall of America. And it is significant to note that the average span of the world's great civilizations has been but 200 years. And our nation is right on the eve of its 200th birthday. The salt of the earth is rapidly diminishing, and we believe that the United States has already played its leading role in this great drama of the ages. Are you and I, as the Lord's people, living in this world of hopelessness and confusion? We view the events that are transpiring before our eyes in a different light. We have the scriptures to light up these prophecies for us. Our hearts react in a different manner. They're lifted up by our faith and our hope in the scriptures. Now certainly we are not unmindful of the sorrows of the world, nor unaware of their despair, but the very events that cause discouragement and unbelief in the hearts of the world's multitude really bring to you and I a hope. And the very conditions throughout the world today, which make many very difficult to give thanks for, furnish us, those of us who are acquainted with the plan, to indeed give thanks to God. And Jesus, in referring to the time which we're living, said to his followers, you remember Luke 21:28, when these things begin to come to pass, then he says what? Look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption or your deliverance draweth nigh. Now we don't lift our heads in rejoicing because there is suffering throughout the world, of course not. But rather because we know that the result of this kingdom, this universal peace, will bring what the world is looking for. As we review the coming prospects, we recognize an area, a troublesome area in the earth, and that is in the Middle East. Today, as you well know, the eyes and the ears of all are directed toward Israel and toward Egypt. And you and I are also watching little tiny Israel as she is being prepared to play her final role in Jacob's trouble. We realize that she must lose all of her friends. However, there is one friend that Israel will always have, and that is the Lord's people. And because of our friendship with Israel, you and I may have yet some unpleasant experiences to go through. Though these United States are still friends with Israel, it won't be for long. And it is then that you and I will become targets because of our friendship with Israel. Let's be prepared for this peculiar experience. As we project our thinking into the future, we must be constantly on the alert for signs that indicate the close proximity of God's kingdom. And one area that we should command, that should command our attention is the activity in the spiritual world. In this great transition period, our present Lord has yet a great task to perform. He must bind the strong man before the blessings are released. Note the words in Mark 3:27. He will first bind the strong man, and then he'll spoil his house. Now this strong man, of course, is Satan. His house, his household, are those over which he has control, the fallen angels. Now it would be reasonable to assume that the first step in binding the strong man would be to strip him of the title that he's had, the God of this world. And since 1874, the ruler of the third world was already present. And I think John 13:31 might have an application here, where it says, "Now shall the prince of this world be cast out." Now you'll recall one of our Lord's first experiences after his baptism. It was with Satan, wasn't it? Would this suggest a pattern for the second presence? Would it be reasonable to assume that his first experience at his return would be with the same adversary, Satan? And that his first act would be to strip Satan of his title, the God of this world? What would this mean if that was done? It would mean that he would lose control over his house, over his household, over those fallen angels. Now, during the past ages in which these fallen angels served Satan, because of their corrupt minds, they perhaps had many wicked schemes that they'd like to have put into practice. But because of being under the control of Satan, they could not. But if the Lord would remove his title, his authority as the prince of demons, then this would give the fallen angels the opening that they were looking for. And so with Satan's authority removed, what it would do, it would just disorganize the entire household of his. It would release the evil spirits to work independently or in groups without any special direction. Now, this would not mean that Satan would not be active, but that his operations now would have to be changed. No longer would he have any control over his fellow fallen angels. And this loss of Satan's control over his cohorts may account for some of the strange things that are happening throughout the world. Satan's fellow travelers are now operating in disguise as angels of light, aren't they? They have created strange religions, religions that never existed before. Medical science is seeking for their advice, their services. Their influence is recognized in the movie industry, no question. Even the scientists are now taking a new look into the field of the supernatural. They have also invaded the educational systems. Today, over 100 courses are taught in the field of supernatural in American colleges and universities. And some of these evil creatures have even created mysterious vehicles in the sky. Furthermore, If these fallen angels were ever to be brought back into harmony with God, it would be necessary for them to be set free from the bondage that they were in to their leader Satan. And this seems to be Paul's thought in Hebrews 1:6, Revised Version. And when he again bringeth in the firstborn into the world, he saith, let all the angels of God worship him. And the implication here is that when our Lord would come into the world the second time, one of the things that he proposes to do is to give these fallen angels a chance to prove whether they're willing to become angels of God once more. And one of the ways they might demonstrate this is to acknowledge the authority of the one who has returned as the King of the earth. The conditions that surround us today indicate that you and I, in the very near future, are going to have to make some adjustments in our established patterns of life. I believe that adjustments may have to be made in our ecclesia arrangements, as well as in our personal lives. For one example, as the energy crunch begins to exert its pressure upon the people, we're part of this arrangement. We as the Lord's people have to be prepared to lose some of the blessings that we've enjoyed in this country under such ideal conditions. We've taken many blessings for granted. We expect changes in the very near future. We should be prepared for these changes. But let us be very careful of the attitude that we display. Just because you won't get enough gasoline to go to a convention or to a meeting doesn't mean that you should show any signs of rebellion. When curtailment begins to set in by this government, show no signs of rebellion. But let it be a spirit of acceptance. We should realize that these changes are really signs that precede the inauguration of the kingdom. These are things that we've been praying for to happen. And when they do happen and they affect our personal lives, let us remember that these personal lives mean nothing. And so as we look toward the coming prophetic prospects, I think the words of the psalmist should be our watchword. Remember what he said? So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. But let us, brethren, learn to number our days to come properly, not with apprehension, but let us count them as these days go by as so many blessings. Let us count them as so many privileges. Let us count them as so many opportunities to show forth the praises of Him who called us out of darkness into this marvelous light.
Thank you, Brother Edmund, for those remarks on prophetic retrospects and prospects, letting us see how that things have developed for the Lord's second presence in this harvest that we're living now.